The Athletic.
Jordan, you're a great professional, but tell me you're going to get absolutely rotten tonight, like me.
Possibly.
Come on, Jordan, go for it, lad. Enjoy yourself.
Cheers, Cara.
Once again, thanks for joining the Red Agenda. Massive game with Manchester United to look ahead to. What should the balance of the team look like? And of course, who are you backing now in the title race? We'll talk with our guys, Simon Hughes, Kiva O'Neill. I'm Steve Hothersall. We'll also touch on the FA Cup third round. Was it good for the soul? Well, I suppose so, if you adopted Marine or Chorley. We'll take a look at that. Right, this is the Red Agenda. Throughout January, you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special price. Enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best footy writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts for less than £4 a month. Just head to theathletic.com/LiverpoolPod and sign up and enjoy The Athletic throughout 2021. That's theathletic.com/LiverpoolPod. Liverpool's recent Premier League form has been a bit alarming. Three-game league spell, which has seen the goals dry up and the form stuttering. So just a blip or something more serious. Of course, Manchester United lie around the corner. Let's start off with Simon Hughes. Si, just a blip or should we be concerned?
Well, I can understand why there are concerns, just because of the... Well, everything that we've discussed in the last couple of weeks in terms of the defence. I mean, that's the main talking point, isn't it? I don't think it's the actual defence and the people who are playing in defence. It's the impact of playing players out of position in defence has on the rest of the team. So, yeah, I mean, I think going into a game against Manchester United over the last sort of 2 or 3 years at Anfield, you'd be expecting Liverpool to win. But I just think with the threat that United have got in attack particularly, that's their strength. It's going to be a bit closer this season, perhaps. But, you know, I think Liverpool, you wouldn't sort of back them to extend this run into a fourth game, particularly when the fourth game's Manchester United. They usually find a way out of it. You know, it's not like the players have forgotten who they are. There's still adrenaline and everything else attached to this game, the emotional significance, which I think the manager will try and ride on a little bit. So I just think that ultimately, you know, that there are a few players down at the moment and there's going to be a few rocky patches, you know, with everything that's been happening, you know, outside of football as well, you know, in terms of COVID availability and everything else. So it is an unusual season. It's a unique season. And I do think that ultimately whoever has the highest proportion of players who are available and keeps the calm amongst the madness will end up winning this game. And, you know, I think Man United have got a chance at the title this season, the way it's gone. You know, it's so tight up there. I mentioned last week about, you know, a few concerns about Liverpool getting into the Champions League. Now, that's obviously, you know, sort of an extreme version of the thing that you don't want to happen from a Liverpool perspective. But it is so tight up there. It's ridiculously tight up there. I'm not saying that will happen to Liverpool, but I think equally it means that there are teams this season who can compete for the title that you wouldn't normally consider. And United amongst them, because they've got every team's got fragilities and weaknesses at the moment. So it's about who handles that process of all this madness the best, I think.
A little bit later in the pod, we'll put the guys on the spot and ask them who they think will win the Premier League title. Kiva, Manchester United next up, and they could be the Premier League leaders by the time Liverpool play them. Of course, we're recording this before Burnley play Manchester United. If you'd rewound 3 or 4 weeks ago, there's no way you would have expected that. But all of a sudden, Liverpool versus Manchester United, so much rides on this.
It's kind of nice that it's set it up like this, just because, especially if United win, which you do expect them to do against Burnley, just because obviously then they'll be 3 points ahead in Liverpool. That becomes a must-win game. Then you can't give anyone the lead in this, because you just, you know, a couple of games, a drop points against Liverpool, obviously play Burnley, drop points there, and then, you know, it's you're a few points behind, and, you know, February comes and then March, April, and you know, before you know it, you can't catch up. So I think, you know, it's a massive game. It's a must win for Liverpool either way, but it just feels that little bit more important with United potentially, you know, coming into it top of the league. And I know obviously last year it felt like the important game because, you know, it was the game when the cop collectively sang, now you're going to believe us, we're going to win the league, because beating Man United gives you that. Liverpool were well ahead anyway, and were probably, you know, destined to do it long before that. But the United game is, you know, the rivalry is quite fierce, and beating them is always sort of a marker for Liverpool's season. Obviously, you think 2013-14, they beat them twice, and, you know, the season when we missed out by a point, they did the same, and, you know, well, drop points, didn't he, to them late on in the season. And I feel like those games, and similar to the Everton games almost, if you drop points in them games, they feel like they affect you psychologically more than dropping points in any other game can.
So much history going around this rivalry. But given United's challenge at the top end of the table, Si, it feels that there's plenty more at stake here.
Well, it's actually quite unusual history between Liverpool and Man United, in that very rarely throughout the course of time have the two teams been neck and neck at the top. I think obviously people might point towards that period, I think 96, 97, when it was a month to go in the season and Liverpool lost at home to United in a game which could have been pivotal, but it didn't really feel like a title race as such. And then there was obviously the 2008-09 season when it was even closer than that. But even so, Liverpool were always, for a long period, sort of behind Man United. So it was like Liverpool were playing catch-up. It wasn't like they were going neck and neck, sort of exchanging one team being top, the other team taking over and stuff like that. So there's certainly never been a period of, like, sort of over a period of time where both teams have had a go at each other, exchanging titles, like in the way that Man United and Arsenal did for a period, and a bit later on United, Chelsea and even City to some extent. So it's unusual in that sense. There always seems to be one team on its up and one team is on its down. And this is the first time, really, that both teams, you wouldn't say they're both right on the up, but that they're both competing for the same position. I mean, obviously, you'd still fancy Liverpool to win. Liverpool would be favourites for this game. You'd still say Liverpool really should be the team that goes and gets closest to the title out of the two teams. Because if you look at Liverpool's team, you know, obviously they've had a lot more recent success together. You know, won the Champions League, won the league. Man United's team haven't won anything together before. They haven't really shown signs that they're capable of doing that. You know, I think the last trophy was under Jose Mourinho 3 or 4 seasons ago. So they're in an unusual position, given obviously United's dominance over the last sort of 25, 30 years. So it's an intriguing period, really, because over the next couple of months, we could see both teams sort of going at it for the title. I think Liverpool, for me, it'll be between Liverpool and United and City come the end of the season. I think City look very good at the moment. They've got a bit of confidence coming into form at just the right time, which you sort of need as a trampoline for your form later on in the season. They've proven, you know, with this team, let's not forget 2 years ago, that they can still go on a long run. I know that earlier on in the season, they weren't great, but I think they've got the defence sorted now, and that seems to be the basis for a lot of the performances that they've had. So yeah, interesting times. Not any of the teams really firing on a consistent basis, but I think it makes it for quite an exciting title race.
So Jurgen Klopp's got 9 days to work with his players ahead of this fixture. Kiva, that's a luxury that he hasn't been afforded too much this season. Important break to reset mentally, physically.
Yeah, I mean, he'll look at it as a great thing. We only to make sure the players are, you know, up to speed, and, you know, just gives more time for those injured to come back, doesn't it? But I kind of think, I don't know if the break always does Liverpool any good. You know, we've saw them have breaks before, and it kind of almost disrupts the rhythm a little bit, I find, which is worrying in itself. But now I think, you know, from Jurgen Klopp's perspective, it's definitely a good thing, isn't it? Considering, you know, all the onslaught of injuries Liverpool have suffered this season. Naturally, you look at it and think, well, that's a long time to sort of, you know, keep people on the ground, keep them rested. And I feel like probably will suit Liverpool, because Man United's a perfect game to sort of shake you out of any sort of rest and recovery kind of zone, isn't it? I think, you know, as soon as the whistle blows, Liverpool will be right up for that. So,
but I think we thought they'd be shaken out of it, Kiva, after the first poor display, not least the Newcastle display as well. You keep expecting them to sort of, I don't know, come out of it and acknowledge that they've had a bad game, but we've seen three on the trot now.
Yeah, I think that's why Aston Villa was probably the perfect thing for Liverpool to shake that sort of weird hangover that they've been carrying around since the end of last season. They haven't sort of looked themselves, have they? They've looked themselves in games against like Wolves, Leicester, you think of, you know, there've been other games, obviously Palace, and then they sort of disappear into themselves again and sort of lose the way a little bit. And it's just interesting, isn't it? I think Thiago will have a big say coming in the weeks and months to come, won't he? I think he showed that in his cameo against Aston Villa's kids. He's just a different breed of player, isn't he? And he just seems to unlock everyone around him. I mean, Shaqiri looks world-class again, which, you know, we know he's got that quality, but he's probably never always shown it on a consistent basis for Liverpool. But he just seems, you know, enlightened, doesn't he, by Thiago's presence on the pitch. I think you feel like going in 1-1 at half time in that game was, you know, it was kind of fun. I thought it was like, you know, it's the cup, the young lad who was at Barcelona, Louis Barry, scored a great goal, and you know, it was kind of enjoyable a little bit. You could take some joy from it, I think, although it was quite worrying as well if Liverpool wouldn't have got nothing from that game. But then, you know, they obviously come back and win in the fashion that they do in what was quite a controlled performance. And I feel like that 45 minutes will be more important than anything that happened in those last three games for Liverpool, just to get that sort of, you know, like Milner mentioned after the game, to start playing in the way that Liverpool do, and, you know, just getting that sort of rhythm back again. And as I mentioned before, you know, there's no bigger game than playing Man United at Anfield, is there? So, you know, they'll be all well up for that now.
Let's go to some team selection for the game, Si. Obviously, the keeper speaks for himself. You'd expect a lot more from Trent Alexander-Arnold, and, you know, you need Trent and Andy Robertson to be firing for this one.
Well, I did think it was interesting when Jürgen Klopp spoke about Trent's form last week. Obviously, he's had the issue with COVID at the start of the season, which I think he wanted to sort of obviously underplay and not really draw attention to at that point. But obviously, you know, nobody really knows how this affects anybody at the moment. And I think obviously Trent didn't have the benefit of a proper pre-season campaign, which made it harder for him to go and perform when he came back from that. He didn't have much preparation for the actual season when it started. And then, of course, got up and running and then picked up an injury at a pretty bad time, and then comes back into the team just at the point where that the fixtures are sort of becoming a bit more intense. So I do have quite a lot of sympathy with him, really. He's still a human being. Let's not forget that. It's difficult to recover from something that we know very little about in COVID, and equally the injury that he had came at a bad time, and it was one of those annoying sort of injuries as well. And so I think I would hope that he'll get back and get back to form. I think football as well is a lot about confidence. You know, players suffer dips from time to time. You know, Steven Gerrard had it, Jamie Carragher had it. You know, I'm sure, absolutely certain, he'll get back there because he's of that mindset. And when he does, that'll be a big plus for Liverpool, because they need the fullbacks to perform well. I know we mentioned Andy Robertson last week. I thought he looked a bit tired at Southampton, but he's been outstanding for Liverpool this season all the way through. I think his form this season has been as good as any of the other seasons that he's played for the club. And, you know, if Liverpool are going to get back on track, you know, they need that width in the team to provide the service for the front line and to provide the space.
Is it no coincidence for you, Si, that obviously the front three have sort of struggled to sort of convert chances and score goals in the last three games, perhaps at the same time as we're talking about those fullback issues as well?
Yeah, I think it is connected in some way. And I think it just reminds that the sort of, I know that there are star players in this Liverpool team, and players have emerged as star players in this Liverpool team, but the real strength is the structure of the team. It's no greater than the sum of its parts in many ways. I know it's a cliche, but I do think for the players to get the best out of themselves, it relies on, you know, other players completing what their functions, I guess, within the framework of the setup. So it goes back to what I was saying. If you've got a midfield or two midfielders playing in defence, that is going to at some point have an effect on the sort of consistency of the midfield. Obviously, over the last sort of since Jürgen Klopp's been at Liverpool, he's changed and rotated the midfield quite regularly. Really, the forward line hasn't had as much of a rest, and the full backs, despite, you know, sort of the amount of running they have to do, they don't get much of a rest either. And with Virgil van Dijk being there, he certainly will play all the time. So all these things are obviously having an effect on the way Liverpool are playing at the moment. And I just thought, you know, the last game against Southampton, it looked to me like the sort of the forwards were snatching a little bit of the opportunities that did come their way. And I think that happens when you know that you sort of, you have to, you're not going to get an abundance of chances necessarily, the sort of chances that Liverpool would normally create, having to work harder for those opportunities. So they're still world-class players, you know, they're still motivated, but sometimes, you know, football throws up these situations where you've got players missing and, you know, various other challenges which you don't expect. And I think that, for me, I think that the big thing is that they look a little bit short of confidence at the moment, and I think that's what Jurgen Klopp will have to work on, because he can get more out of those players. There's absolutely no doubt about it, on a consistent basis as well, because they've been unbelievably consistent over such a long period of time. Any sort of drop off does feel like, you know, pretty major. And to draw West Brom at home was a really bad result, you know, particularly when you see what West Brom have done since. To draw with Newcastle away was a really bad result, because they've been losing a lot of games. Southampton, obviously, they're doing much better this season. You could say, well, it's not as much of a shock, that result, in some ways, because how well Southampton have been playing, but you'd still expect Liverpool to get a decent result there if they perform well. So it's a bad run, but I would expect there's obviously a decent amount of time now between the Villa game and the Man United game. And Klopp, I always feel, sort of works best when he's got maybe, you know, 6, 7, 8 days to work with the team and focus on exactly what they're going to do.
It's the Red Agenda, your Liverpool podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. I'm Steve Hover, so we have Simon Hughes, Kiefer O'Neill. Kiefer, barely a week goes by without us talking about centre-half, so why make it any different in the lead-up to Manchester United? If Joel Matip isn't fit, and I presume that's the basis on which we have to start, what is your preferred centre-half pairing, given Fabinho will be there? Do you take Jordan out? Do you actually use Reece? I don't know. There's a lot of heads in different places on this one.
Yeah, I don't think Henderson being in defence against Southampton worked massively in terms of Liverpool moving forward. He was just too far back the pitch to get things moving, wasn't he? And, you know, you likely would see him again, just because, you know, he, apart from that mistake and just being so far back, he had a relatively good game, I'd say, other than Liverpool were pretty poor. I think I'd prefer it if someone like Reece Williams was to play, to be honest, just because I feel like Fabinho will do a good job of guiding a young lad through the game. You know, Reece Williams has shown in recent weeks that he can step up. I mean, he played against Tottenham, didn't he? And obviously Liverpool won that game. So I feel like, you know, he's probably a player that, you know, you don't really want to be starting against United, but, you know, needs must. And, you know, I don't think it's going to be, Liverpool fans won't be shocked to see him, will they, necessarily. But maybe he does go for Henderson again. And in this time now that they've got off, they work on it a little bit more. And, you know, Henderson's given more instructions. He's partnered up with Fabinho. They get to know each other more so in a defensive capacity than the midfield sort of role they both used to share. And obviously with Thiago now in there, obviously that offers, you know, Liverpool so much more, doesn't it, moving forward. But, you know, you really want Henderson in your midfield, don't you? But obviously there's Nat Phillips there as well. He's always put a good account of himself when he's been called on, of course. But, you know, it is quite still a desperate scenario Liverpool are in, isn't it? You know, with no sort of centre-back on the horizon, and Joel Matip just, you know, playing one game and then unable to play the next. It's not where you want to be. But, you know, Fabinho has been our Lord and Saviour almost, hasn't he?
It's interesting you use that word desperate. Si, you referred to confidence before. If it is a desperate situation, how do you think that affects confidence ahead of this sort of size of game?
Well, I think it can help, you know, when the pressure's on. You know, you tend to see the bigger the game, you know, it's a good opportunity to get yourself out of a rut, because you know, usually what you've got to do. I mean, I think it'll be quite interesting how Man United approach this game, because there might be a temptation to sort of maybe have a go at Liverpool and try and attack them. But teams that have done that have often come unstuck quite quickly. And we've seen how, you know, United defensively, I would say it's there's a few question marks there. So
especially over the keeper.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's gone from, you know, being very consistent goalkeeper over a number of years to a keeper who's sort of been costing them points rather than saving them. So I would think there's certainly areas where Liverpool will be able to get at. And over the last few years, the performances by Man United at Anfield, obviously in full, front of a full house when, you know, the spectators are baying for blood, you know, the United performances have been really weak. Like, as weak as... I can't think of any performances that Liverpool have put up at Old Trafford as being as weak as the performances that Man United have put up at Anfield. I know Liverpool have been disappointing at Old Trafford. They haven't got the results under Jurgen Klopp in the league that they wanted, and sometimes not performed in the way that you'd expect. But, you know, I think that the manner of the defeats for United under Solskjaer last season and Jose Mourinho, I think the year before, were just really, really, really poor. And it was the moment last season, I think, when Liverpool beat Man United and they obviously pulled away. It was a real, for me, it felt like a real turning point in sort of the club's positions in global football, because United were just so far away from being where they want to be. Obviously, the whole context of the game has sort of been changed dramatically, not just by what has happened in football, but outside of football, because of, you know, the way the seasons have been structured and the way last season finished. And I think Jurgen Klopp is now dealing with a different challenge to the one he would have expected. Well, he's dealing with different challenges to the most, well, all managers would have done before when they're trying to defend the title, because you don't have the fans behind you at Anfield. And I know Liverpool have only dropped, I think it was just dropped points against West Brom at Anfield. But I think it affects the away games as well when Liverpool play away, because I think I've said this before, I think that it means the teams know. Like Southampton, for example, knew last week that they didn't have the pressure of trying to go out and at least play a little bit of football, because there wasn't a crowd there getting frustrated by the team's unwillingness to get forward. You can only do that when there's no spectators. So it has affected Liverpool, and they've had to sort of treat games a lot differently. And ultimately, that has contributed towards the gap between the two teams obviously being a lot closer at this stage of the season than it was last season. Obviously, you've got to give credit to Man United as well, because they've had some really good results after a terrible start to the season. They've got players in attack who I think, you know, are in the world, almost in the world class category. But still, I just still think collectively, in terms of the identity of the team, that they're still some way off Liverpool. But, you know, given the performances and forms of both teams at the moment, you know, that they'll go to Anfield with a lot of confidence, you know, thinking that they can get some form of a positive result.
Kiva, let's go to title predictions. Piece on The Athletic asking some of the different correspondents who they think will win the title. Simon's gone for Man City, so I'll give him a minute to think about his answer on this one. Where's your head at right now?
With Liverpool? No. Well, look, it's going to be difficult, isn't it? I think you sort of gauge that quite early on in the season, and especially just over that sort of Christmas period when Liverpool failed to sort of take what would have been 8 points or whatever, wouldn't it, of a lead. You know, they failed to do that, and that's on them. If that fuels the fire for them to put in such a solid run now, which you think they'll need to with the way Man City are playing, because they just look as though they're going to put together that ruthless kind of run that, you know, that Liverpool lost the title by a couple of years ago. So it's difficult to say. I wouldn't side with Man City just because, you know, it's not enjoyable too, is it really? You know, I think Liverpool have still got a lot in the locker. I think a lot did depend on whether they brought a centre-half in, and now if they had, I'd be saying, yeah, I think Liverpool can go and do this. But obviously without Gomez and Van Dijk and such a lengthy absence from them both, it does feel kind of like it's swaying elsewhere. I don't think, to be honest, United will be able to keep it up. I could be wrong, but when you look at their team, I don't know, on paper it's kind of like the performances are all right, and you know, they've got a strong attack, I'd say, and you know, like you've mentioned there, a little bit of an issue with whether Henderson or De Gea is the goalkeeper. So you know, they've still got questions they need to sort of be answering, but obviously they're putting wins on the board, aren't they, and that's the most important thing, and that's what Liverpool need to do. You'd expect them to sort of finish the season strongly, as they have done in the past few seasons. But yeah, I think I'm still siding with Liverpool, and you know, a lot might change in the next couple of weeks, but I just feel like it'd be no fun mother for me to say Man City. Let Simon do that.
Listening to your explanation there, it sounds like you're emotionally unable to allow yourself to say Manchester City.
No, can't do it yet.
But Simon has, and he's and you've actually talked about defensively where they've improved. And I think this is a really credible point here because Ruben Diaz but Stones and Diaz all of a sudden look like they've got something solid at the back, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. I think that just gives City the edge at the moment. I'm not saying that they will, but will win the league. But I think that they have to be probably favourites, I'd say. Just because I know they're a few points behind Liverpool, but I think that given their injury record, I know obviously they've got absentees in terms of COVID, but in terms of their injury records, which in terms of the long-term injury record, that they haven't got many. They've also got Sergio Aguero, who hasn't been playing, and I just can't believe that he hasn't scored for so long in the Premier League. I just think he's got to score at some point, and then when he scores once, you'd expect him to score again and again. So coupled with the sort of the rise and return to form of John Stones, I mean, I think he's had, I can understand the criticism that he's got, but I do think he's a really top player. And if you can get him the right partner besides him and the right system around him, I think he could be a really good player.
Was there a point, Si, where all of a sudden you switched from Liverpool to Man City?
Well, I mean, just over the last few weeks, really. You make me sound like I've sort of turned into a Man City fan there, Steve. But
you're a turncoat.
I've obviously seen a fair bit of them. I thought he played brilliantly at Chelsea. Guardiola seems to have a bit of confidence back as well. You know, maybe he looked a bit short of confidence, I thought, in some of the press conferences that he gave early on in the season. And the momentum is with them at the moment. But of course, you would not back against Liverpool to get the other side of January and get some momentum back into their season as well. I mean, Liverpool under Jurgen Klopp have consistently, really finished strongly. So the two of them have both got track records for this sort of thing. And you could see a situation where eventually the two of them sort of pull away from it because they have the experience of being in this sort of position as well. So, but just for me at the moment, just in terms of, you look at City's squad, I remember discussing it earlier in the season when City were obviously playing poorly and the suggestion was that they were going to be miles off the season, but they've still got very good players all over the pitch and a deep squad. Ruben Diaz has been a really good signing for them. I mean, again, they've spent a huge amount of money on him. It sort of doesn't get really recognised when City pay £50-60 million on a defender because that's what they do. But he's been a really good signing and he's made John Stones, or he's helped John Stones get back to the sort of form that we saw maybe 5 years ago when everybody sort of expected him to become a really world-class defender. So it's looking good for them at the moment, and they've proven over the years that, with different campaigns apart from last season, that when they get going, they're very difficult to stop. So that's why I think that. And I've always thought from the moment that Virgil van Dijk got injured, it was going to be very hard for Liverpool to regain the title just because he's a world-class player. You can't spend the last sort of 3 or 4 seasons saying what a player Virgil van Dijk is and then just assume that it's not going to impact on the team. One of the reasons I think why Manchester City sort of fell away last season, and I know they did dramatically in terms of points, was because, they were one key defender down, Vincent Kompany. They didn't replace him. Leroy Sané was injured for 6 to 7 months. This has a massive impact on the way teams, on the success of teams and the destination of trophies. Obviously, the season before last, Sané scored a goal against Liverpool that essentially, you could say won City the league. And then Vincent Kompany scored a goal against Leicester, which obviously made that reality a bit closer. So any absentee of Van Dijk standing is going to have a major impact. And if Liverpool were to win the league, given all those circumstances, I think they'll have done an incredible job because let's not forget Virgil van Dijk, is one of, if not the, most dominant, influential defenders in world football.
Right, it's the Red Agenda. Thanks very much for your company. I'm Steve Hothersall, Simon Hughes and Kiefer O'Neill with me. Let's just round up the FA Cup. Nothing to do with Liverpool, but we'll put that to what's. Let's talk Marine, because they captivated the nation and beyond. I think globally they probably got headlines, didn't they? Simon, you've bought into this ever since the draw was made. And why not? Because the gulf between the two sides, just enormous in terms of the league pyramid. And we saw that played out. But actually, what a moment for the club.
It's been an incredible week, really. I mean, I've spent a lot of time with the players and the staff at Marine over the last 7 days. And that piece will be up on The Athletic by the time people listen to this, perhaps. So, yeah, I mean, the one thing that's really, really impressed me, really, about Marine is is how professionally they've handled the whole situation. I mean, you think about, I hate going on about COVID, but all the challenges that a Premier League club has around COVID, think about how a non-league club deals with that, and all their players are semi-professional, full-time jobs, as it's been well documented. Not a single player came up positive in the tests, you know, two rounds of tests, which have come just after Christmas in a part of the country which has been ravaged by the pandemic. And I think that just shows you, A, how committed and focused the players have been, and, you know, the positive sort of messages that the manager's been getting across, Neil Young. And I've just been really impressed by the way they've put together a, okay, they lost 5-0, but it really could have been 15-20 in terms of the distance between the two teams and the quality of the team that the Tottenham put out. But it wasn't that. And I thought, you know, for the first sort of 25 minutes until Tottenham scored, Marine looked organised, and they did what they'd set out to do, and the according to the tactical plan that the manager had set up. So, you know, taken away from the emotion and sort of, you mentioned capturing the heart of the country, like Princess Diana or something. Sorry.
We need it, Si, at this time.
Yeah. But I do think that, you know, I've just been really impressed by sort of how, you know, people talk about non-league football in a certain way, you know, and I can understand that, you know, it's a lot closer to the fans, but Marine, you know, are doing things the right way. And I think in their league, you know, you'd expect them now with the sort of the funds that they're generated from the FA Cup to improve and hopefully get a promotion or two over the next couple of years whenever football returns. But it has been a great story, as you say, Steve, because, you know, I think people want a bit of romance at the moment. You know, they want to see the impossible happen. And when that shot from Neil Kenji struck the crossbar at 0-0 from 30 yards, you know, I think, you know, anybody who's watching the game across the world, because as you say, it was a global audience, we're getting pretty excited. I mean, I was inside the ground, and, you know, the clank off the crossbar. I think Joe Hart just stood there in a state of shock, didn't he? It was quite interesting watching his body language throughout the whole game. But it's been a great run for me, and you know, I think that 5-0 against one of the best teams in world football, a team that went to Old Trafford and scored six. You know, it's no shame whatsoever. They really hung in there, the players, particularly in the second half, when it must have been tempting, or not tempting, but it must have been worrying for them at the rate at which Tottenham scored the four goals in the first half.
It's all the side stories, isn't it, Kiva, that made this such an attraction? The pictures that we saw on TV, the houses with their numbers, those stood on the sheds, those having a champagne. Even actually when you come to the players, I think it was the Marine defender James Joyce. He's done an interview where he said he was having a chat with Gareth Bale, who said he was hungry. And James Joyce said, "Don't worry, we've got you a Tesco meal deal." I mean, it's all the other stuff bar the football that actually made this so enjoyable.
Yeah, you live for it, don't you? All those stories, you know, which I think are giving us all a little bit of hope at the minute. And I think it's come at such a time when, you know, last Monday, you know, it was we went back into lockdown, and it was quite depressing, really, a feeling, wasn't it? And then the FA Cup has come and just rescued us all, almost, you know, with the Liverpool game. That felt like such a nice thing. There have been, you know, great stories over the weekend with Chorley, you know, I think was it Crawley as well, possibly. You know, these sort of stories that we've needed. And I think, you know, Marine, like the way they carried themselves, as Simon said, on social media, you know, they've probably kept the club, you think, now the finances they've made, probably for what, 10 years of the club going forward, you know, the security that gives them, will be able to just, you know, breathe a lot of life into the club and the community as well. Because, you know, when you bought that ticket, the virtual ticket, which I think they sold over 30,000, you could donate to, you know, the community as well. And I think a lot of people would have done that. It's, you know, it's not just about them, it's about the people in the area. And that's why non-league and grassroots football is so important, because it's, it supports communities that may not get that support otherwise. And, you know, for, I think, just saw Gary Lineker tweet there, 6.8 million people at the peak were watching that game yesterday, which, I mean, probably more so for Simon growing up in that area and being the mascot as a kid, that must just be like, wow, this is incredible. But it was really sort of pinch yourself, wasn't it, yesterday? And I thought the BBC coverage of it was outstanding. Other than to be there, you know, I thought they brought it to our screens and you really got to, you know, across all those sort of human stories of, you know, obviously the goalkeeper, he had a week off from working in Sainsbury's, didn't he? And then he put in, I thought, a brilliant display. I think they were all brilliant. I loved it. The manager's Neil Young and the one of the players is James Joyce. It all felt quite poetic, didn't it? And yeah, I think we need it. It restored something, didn't it, in us?
Absolutely. There was just numerous great bits. I love the moment where Dele Alli falls over Si and his teammates just rip him from the bench. Oh,
yeah. Well, I was watching him warm up because I was down like sort of to the Jubilee Road terrace, and I use that word terrace sort of lightly because it's a one step. Basically, the one-step terrace, and they were warming up before the game, and you just realise the size and physique of these Tottenham players. I think, you know, when you see Dele Alli on TV, he looks quite sort of skinny, really, but he's absolutely massive. And when he got the ball, I mean, it's just that his movements and he was just playing with his slippers on, wasn't he, really, yesterday? He was just incredible, I thought. At Lucas Moura, Gedson Fernandez, and Marine tried the best to sort of unsettle him. There was a moment when I think the lad Adam Hughes, who was playing the left-sided centre-back, had I can't really repeat what he said to Fernandez when he threw himself up in the air. But the one thing that I did find interesting was that Fernandez was the only player on the pitch that went down with cramp in the whole game. Couldn't believe it. It's like, you know, he's a full-time player and he's playing against a load of part-time fellas who've just come off the production line and he's the one who goes down with cramp. I just couldn't believe it. It was one of the weirdest things I've seen all weekend. But yeah, I mean, just to touch on what Kiva said, it was just a shame for obviously, when I say a shame for the Crosby area, I mean, Mourinho probably average gate over the last couple of years has been seeing anything between 350 and 450, and I just wish, you know, that it would have been possible to have those fans at least inside the ground, because when you've got 300 or 400 at Marina, it sort of feels like it's 3,000 or 4,000, you know what I mean, because it's so tight. But to see Jose Mourinho on College Road with his Joe Pesci Benny hat was just surreal. I mean, it was an incredible couple of days, really. And I sort of felt in some ways a bit cocooned from it all, because as I said, I was with the players in the hotel in Liverpool, and that I couldn't believe how relaxed they were. You know, that coming up against players that have played in some of the biggest games in world football. The last time Gareth Bale played against a Merseyside club, it was in the Champions League final where he scored an overhead kick. Lucas Moura scored a hat trick in another Champions League semi-final. This is what Marina trying to beat. It was just, you know, they were trying to achieve the impossible, essentially. But I really do think that they gave as good as they got, you know, in terms of the competition and the effort and everything else. And, I think the manager's a bit disappointed because that's the competitor in him. But nevertheless, I keep trying to remind him in the conversations that I've had with him since the final whistle yesterday that he shouldn't get too down about it.
Yeah, full respect to Tottenham as well, because they treated the whole thing professionally, even down to giving the Marine squad new shirts at the very end of it. Obviously, for obvious reasons, they couldn't give them the shirts they were wearing at the time. Right, let's finish the Red Agenda with a word on a piece that Kiva's written. This is about VAR. We don't want to go on forever about it, but it's on the site now. And specifically, it's focusing in on Michael Oliver. Why have you written about this, Kiva?
Yeah, well, you know, referees rarely speak out, do they? They hardly ever get interviewed during their careers. I think, obviously, they want to remain impartial, and that's important. But Michael Oliver's done an interview with Ollie Holt for the Mail on Sunday, which was published yesterday, obviously. And I thought he spoke really well. He's, you know, one of the league, if not the, you know, one of the best referees in the world, I'd say. He's always been a good referee, very professional. So it was kind of nice just to see his insight a little bit and sort of, you know, get that human side almost of him, because he is almost robotic-like at times, isn't he? So it was quite refreshing to read. But, you know, obviously he spoke about the derby and said, you know, he held his hands up and said, you know, that was a mistake. We were too focused on getting the offside decision rather than looking at Pickford's challenge on Van Dijk. And he said, you know, probably would have been sent off. And the piece isn't about that because, look, that's gone. That's October. People are commenting, like, you're still going on about this. And it's like, I'm not going on about that anymore. The piece is more about how refreshing it was to hear from Michael Oliver. And maybe we should hear from referees more. Now, that's not to say we want them interviewed every week. We don't. I don't think that would be feasible, nor would it be good for anyone. I just think maybe, you know, during those big decisions, if we could hear, you know, the person at Stockley Park and the person on the pitch and just hear sort of how they're going about that decision, and then does it not make things a lot easier for all of us? And probably, you know, gives us a little bit more insight and knowledge into how these decisions come about. And then I think we can criticise referees, but if we can hear how their approach to decisions are made, then maybe we would criticise them less. I don't know, I just feel like that little bit of transparency could maybe just help. You know, people are still, you know, have the sort of complaints about VAR, but I think, you know, one way I think they could fix things a little bit more and improve it would be for us to hear. I don't want us to hear the whole game, you know, just those moments when the referee goes over to the pitch side monitor or he's in discussion with the VAR referee. You know, I just think that would be helpful.
Absolutely. Piece online now at The Athletic. Great stuff on VAR and Michael Oliver in particular. My thanks as always to Simon Hughes and Kiva O'Neill. Back in a week after that United game.
The Athletic.